Welcome to Growth for Good, stories of people building something meaningful in the Highlands of Scotland. I'm Drew Hendry, and in this episode, I'm talking to Curtis McMillan. Curtis is the founder of Ar Gará. In Gaelic, that means our garden. And it's a community interest company that's only been underway for about 6 months. He's found a way to make the commercial side of his work pay for the part he actually cares about. Garden care for people who are isolated, or people who are grieving, or just need somebody to turn up. This is still very early days for him and a bit of a departure for us to concentrate in a newly founded business, but that's what makes this conversation worth having. We talk about where the instinct came from, a business that ended because his old partner wanted to go to Spain, and a moment with a client called Louise that tells you everything about why Ar Gará exists at all. So here's Curtis McMillan. So Curtis, thank you for joining me in the podcast on Growth for Good.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit about you. Where did you come from? Have you lived in the Highlands? You moved to the Highlands? Tell us about you first.
Okay. I grew up in Bewi. I moved around quite a lot as a child. I was in Bewi until I was about 8 or 9 years old. Moved down to London, then to Liverpool, and then back up to the Highlands, where I stayed with my grandparents in North Keswick.
And was this a life choice that you made in terms of leaving home, or was this family that had taken you there? Or?
Yeah, it was family that had taken me there. So we moved away from Bewi with my mother down to London, and then back to Liverpool, and then I made a choice to come back up and live with my grandparents because this is where I felt I belonged. I stayed with my grandparents, went to Charleston Academy, loved school, really enjoyed it. And I suppose that's where my love of gardening really was born.
Can I just take back a wee step there? Because you made a really interesting comment about this is where you felt you belonged. And I've got some empathy with that because as a young child who wasn't from the Highlands,
right,
I came here and immediately thought, this is where I belong at the age of 8. What was it? What was that draw like? What was that feeling like that you'd had experienced these big cities, just had to come back to the Highlands? Tell us about that.
I suppose that's it. It's kind of a combination of the slow pace of life here. You experience the fast pace, which is quite bewildering for a child who grew up in Bewi. But also that sort of tangled with nostalgia. All my friends were here. My family were here as well, from my father's side. And I just always felt like I needed to get back up here. I needed to be, I felt safer in the Highlands. And the way I did that was I approached my grandparents. They wanted me to come home.
Well, given your company, Lenford Services, is all about groundworks and landscaping and so forth, this episode's going to be littered with puns about being grounded and things like that. But you were about to say that you felt there was something you had to do when you came back. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so what I was saying is my love of gardening really was born from living with my grandparents. She used to force me to cut the grass and get involved with these gardening tasks. And I was really of the age where, you know, if it wasn't cool, I wasn't really interested. However, with hindsight, I realised what an immense impact it had on me and in the way I enjoy the outdoors now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'd come back to live with your grandparents. I think it's only fair that they should get something out of you in terms of
you're absolutely right.
What you were doing. So they obviously got you to work away in the garden.
Absolutely.
And you were saying that you got something from that. Mm-hmm. You obviously, like most kids, you probably wanted to stay inside on an Xbox or whatever.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And maybe go and meet your mates and things like that. But actually you were kind of forced, as you said, to use your language into the garden.
Yeah.
When was it tripped over from being a chore into something you enjoyed?
Well, directly after I left school. Mm-hmm. I left school sort of midway through sixth year.
Yeah.
I loved school, I said that. However, I had no sort of vocation. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was there, it seemed, mainly for the social aspect. Mm. So I left school sort of not really knowing what I wanted to do. And I ended up working for a few gardeners here and there, you know, just helping out. And I absolutely loved it. These gardeners became role models for me. And I don't know what it was, but they just showed me how to, you know, to work properly with my hands, to speak to people in the community, and to, well, they all seemed to really enjoy what they did. That was something that I always remember. So it's something that stuck with me, and it's something I was drawn back to.
So you're working away with these guys, or girls, whatever. You're working away with them and doing, you know, a bit of gardening, a bit of landscaping and so forth.
Yeah.
But you obviously had ambitions to do more than just work for somebody. So what was the revelation? What was the moment where you said, no, I'm going to do something in Mali?
Yeah, so I was always drawn back to gardening. I went off and did other things, quite a lot of other things. I've done so many little jobs. I didn't really have any skills. So, you know, I've worked in shops, I've worked in call centres, I've done door-to-door down in the Central Belt. I've always wanted to work with children. So I went to do a HNC in Child and Youth Studies. And I got a job as an outdoor practitioner at Stramash, which is a social enterprise. I don't know if you've heard of them. But that was great. I absolutely loved it. I was outdoors, which is exactly what I want to do. And it mixed, you know, my love of the outdoors with my love of childcare. And then lockdown happened. It was really bewildering. I was furloughed. And it was then that I sort of made a decision with a friend to sort of, what we band our heads together. What do we do? How do we use our skills to get back out there? He had a background in gardening, so did I. We started a gardening business.
And this is Lemford Services.
It wasn't, no. So no. This was called Spot on Lawns.
Spot on Lawns.
Yeah, and primarily we wanted to just get out there and do something because we were both twiddling our thumbs in lockdown. I'm sure you remember how difficult it was. And it very quickly became a bit of a social service because we were speaking to elderly people who are socially isolated, even more so because of lockdown. So we'd be the only person they'd spoken to in a long time. And we decided to give a lot of our profits to charity. We sort of seen it as any profit we make is a bonus here. So we were going about all over the Highlands.
You were doing a social enterprise without it being a social enterprise at the time.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly where Argara was born of. But we, John, who I started the business with, he loved to travel. So a lot of the time I was sort of left back trying to run things, and he couldn't run it from Spain, you know what I mean? So we sort
it's
of
difficult came to do gardening from Spain.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. We came to the amicable agreement to just sort of liquidate that company, and then that's when Lemford started.
So you started that as your business. So
yes.
That, you know, everybody's gonna pay the bills.
Yeah.
A lot of entrepreneurs started businesses during the COVID lockdown.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're no different to that, except, you know, you had this kind of hybrid social enterprise.
Yeah.
Then that dissolved, but you had some lessons from that.
Yeah.
And then you started your own Lemford Services. Mm-hmm. So you're charging for work. But there was obviously something nagging you in the back of your head about what you'd left behind. What was the light bulb moment that said, Argaric, I'll do this?
Yeah, the light bulb moment sort of, it happened gradually. There wasn't an exact moment where I was like, this is going to work. But I like to run a lot. I like to walk. And each time I'd go out for a run, I'd walk, I'd find clarity. Or when I was gardening, I'd find clarity. And this idea would pop into my head, and it was unpolished. And I wasn't really sure what it might look like. However, over the space of 6 years, I was able to sort of work on this this business model. And it's born of meeting vulnerable members of the community in my line of work, and also my experience when I was younger. It made sense that this was the right thing to do. I just needed to figure out how I do it. And at the end of 2025, I felt I was ready to make the jump. And, you know, I did it. I broadcast what we were trying to do on Facebook, and the response was incredible. And before I knew it,
What were some of the responses like?
So we put out a survey to try and gauge community impact and community need. And the response was great. A lot of people were telling us that there was a definite need for this kind of service, for what we were trying to provide, especially for vulnerable members of the community who are elderly, socially isolated. And we were actually able to identify a couple of people through that survey alone who we now help in the garden with garden care. So a lot of people also signed up to help us in the future. So with that survey alone, we gained a sort of contact list of people who can come and help us in future projects, which is really great. And it also really, really encouraging because it went from an idea to something that was tangible, something that made sense, you know?
Mm-hmm. And Argarach, tell us about that. What does the name mean and why did you choose that?
So the name Argarach is
Argarach
is Gaelic for our garden, loosely. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to come up with a name that showed the inclusivity of gardening, because that's what it is all about, you know. When I was gardening for people, it was trying to come up with an idea of how I could use my expertise, my knowledge and my tools to help people. So I started doing that, and it very quickly became obvious that, you know, it's not just a garden, it's our garden. The spaces that we share should be maintained and looked after collaboratively.
So you set up a CIC, a community interest company. We talked about having kind of almost done that with your quasi-social enterprise you had when you started up during lockdown, where you're helping people earlier. Why Argarach under a CIC as opposed to, doing it as a business? It's a great business name. Why not?
I get that question quite a lot. And it took me quite a while to identify the best sort of business model for this. The CIC is set up with the idea that we can be self-sustaining within a really short period of time.
And what does that mean, though?
So that works because it's a CIC. We have a commercial branch that allows us to take on commercial work and then pour every penny of the profits directly back into the community. So we're already taking on, you know, contracts for the likes of hotels. We're speaking to factoring companies, and the more we're successful in and these companies and people really want to help out when they know where their money's going and how it's going to impact the community. So the more that we can take on the commercial side, the more work we can do for the community.
But people listening to this will be thinking, wait a minute, this guy, Courtesy, set up Lemford Services, mm-hmm. which is a business, mm-hmm. and he set up this community interest company, which is a competitor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I know.
How does that work?
So it seems crazy. Yeah, I know a lot of people have said that, like in a conflict of interest. But for the interim, my company Lemford Services is running at a maintaining garden level. And I've got a guy called Josh. He's fantastic. He maintains residential gardens. Argarach exists to work and build relationships with companies and businesses on a commercial level who understand that giving back to the community is really a priority for businesses.
So why this passion for giving back as opposed to, you know, I think it's great.
Yeah.
But why this passion for giving back as opposed to I can make lots of money doing this through Lemford Services?
I suppose the passion I have for sort of giving back to the community is one, it's born of my own experience as when I was younger. You know, I actually lost my parents at a very young age. So I've always wanted to do to sort of give back in the way of workshopping, which we started doing. But also the people I've met along the way. There's so many people who are suffering their own sort of woes, be it through social isolation, mental health, bereavement. And I noticed that, and it's day to day, you know, daily I'm meeting people who are going through these things. So it naturally had an impact on me. And I don't know, I guess I just thought, how do I give back? because, like I said, we ended up doing a lot of gardens for free and giving back in that way, but that's not sustainable. So this business model, it being a CIC, exists in order to build relationships and give back to the community. That's the way.
And do you feel this is a, you know, personal question, but do you feel this is a way of honouring your mum and dad and, you know, for your own personal driver, as well as that kind of wider responsibility you feel and love you feel for the Highlands and the communities here?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, I suppose, I think what it really means to me is that it was, you know, I said I left school with no skills or anything like that. I've always wanted to try and make something of myself, but without skills, it's really, really difficult in this world. So, you know, I naturally try and help people, and it took me a while to realise it, but that's the way you make a difference. That's the way you make something of yourself and build something that's really sort of, that works and that's important. And it's great to give back as well. It's such a, I don't feel anything.
Is that your motivator, that feeling of
100%.
You know, getting that response back from 100%. People?
And we've just started, and the feedback I've had from people, you know, about we just did our first workshop with Crocus Highland, and some of the kids said that they feel like they found, you know, their calling, and they feel like they're something, part of something really special.
How does that hit you when you hear something? Just then, the worst thing in podcast where you pat your microphone. But how did you feel when you get that feedback that people go, this is amazing, like that?
Really, really good. I don't really have words for it. It's kind of it's not something that you think of until you sort of get home at night, because...
But life-changing, you know, these conversations say, oh, this has changed things for you.
Yeah, really good. That's why we do it. I suppose, it's, you know, gardening changed my life. If I'm able to then give it back to other people in the form of our garden, our garage, it just makes me feel like I'm doing exactly what I'm meant to be doing, you know.
So we've talked about some of the challenges financially and structure-wise and things like that, and the feedback that you're getting from people and the good stuff that comes out of that as well. But what's been the hardest thing you've found? The company's what, it's a 2026 company, so as we speak, it's only a few months old.
Yeah.
What's been the hardest thing you've found on this journey to get into where you are just now?
The most difficult thing, I would say, is pouring a lot of time and effort into something that you're not really... I've got a young family, so pouring a lot of...
How old are your children?
So my eldest is 6 and my youngest is 2.
And anybody who's had children know that's a handful.
It's a handful.
It's great, but it's a handful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And my partner, Rachel, she works full-time. I work full-time, but I've taken a sort of a hit in the interim to try and get this Argonaut up and running. And I've also taken a back step from my limit company as well. So, you know, the challenges are sort of day-to-day when it pops into your head, you know, I'm not really making any money from this. That can sometimes like be quite difficult, but I just remind myself that this is short term. If I do things right now, in the future, it'll just sort of work itself out, you know? So I would say that's the most difficult part.
And you're talking about people coming out to say good things and so forth. Who's come out to support you that you didn't think would?
I don't think I had any sort of major expectations in who was going to support me. I didn't really know what that looked like. But I would say the most surprising thing, and this sounds ridiculous, is the amount of people in the community who have supported us. We received a donation, which is not something I ever thought we would be looking at doing.
And it unsolicited, just came.
Yeah, and it was from a customer of mine through Lenford's. And it boils down to why I started Argara, because I was building a fence for this a widower. Her name's Louise, and she's a lovely woman. And she offered me a cup of coffee. And I had the coffee, and I sat and I listened to Louise's story. And her story was great. She had a background in bereavement. And her husband was looked after by the Highland Hospice, so naturally I told her about what we were trying to deliver, and I don't know. We just sort of met on a really good level, and then when I'd finished the job, she presented me with a check,
fantastic,
to the tune of £500, which was, you know, something that I didn't even know what to do with the check at this point. I'd just come to build a fence. I stay in touch with Louise now, and I've built a good friendship with her over just meeting her and sharing stories and sharing experience, and that was an eye opener. You know, it all boils down to communication, and that's why it's community driven.
And have you had in your few months that you've been doing this, have you had occasion when you've approached somebody you thought, or a body or whatever, you thought they would help, they'd be most inclined to help, but they've just said no, don't like this idea, or turned out we've had anything like that at all?
Not really. I would say I'm chapping the door daily, so I'm constantly, I'm in everyone's inboxes right now, and they're probably really annoyed at like how much I'm trying to pester them, but I've not really had anybody let me down per se. We're still I will be let down, but it's still really early doors, and you know, we received a small bit of funding from the Common Good Fund, which is going to help us do our workshopping, which is great, and Pat Monroe Foundation are supplying us with PPE for the kids, and Highland Industrial Supplies are going to supply us with some PPE as well. So at the moment, it's really early doors. I'm trying to work on collaborations, trying to pick the right people to collaborate with as well. So I suppose if somebody, I won't feel let down by anyone. If they don't want to help, like help us with what we're doing, then they're probably not the right fit for what we're trying to do, if that makes sense. Or they don't have the same vision, which is absolutely fine.
So we've talked a lot about the reaction for people, and you know, something like this sounds a great idea, feels a great idea. You've talked about the response that you've got from people, and the, you know, even the unsolicited donations for it. But what does building something like this in the Highlands really feel like on a day-to-day basis? You were talking about knocking on doors, being in inboxes and things like that. Do you feel the infrastructure's there to support a community interest company like this? Or are you looking at and thinking that there are gaps there, we need to do something different?
I think that the infrastructure is certainly there. It boils down to how much time you're able to put into it, and if you're looking in the right areas, networking. I feel like there's a lot of people out there who can steer you in the right direction, but they can only give you advice. You have to do the work yourself. You know, they can point you in the direction of a grant that seems to fit the CIC right. However, you have to then go to them and put in the work to try and receive something back from them.
So you feel that the landscape, if you'll pardon that particular pun, is right for you to develop something like this. But basically it's just about the hard knocks of getting around and letting people know about it. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a bit of a feast or a famine.
Okay, so let's follow that through then. Mm-hmm. If that's the case and it's all down to application and effort, where do you see Argara in 5 years' time?
In 5 years' time, I see Argara.
What would success look like? Tell me your picture of success for Argara.
Success for Argara would probably look like, well, I wouldn't base it off how many sort of contracts we have or how much profit we've made. I would base Argara's success on how many lives we've changed, how many community projects we've been successful with, and yeah, how many sort of relationships we built along the way.
If you're going to base it on that, you must have some targets or measurements or things like that, because like I say, it sounds great, it feels great. Mm-hmm. You know, you've had all this outpouring of support. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you're saying, right, it's about how many we do of that, have you put a figure on that? Have you actually put some kind of target on it?
So target wise, it's quite small at the moment. To put a figure on it, if we are to take on a garden for a vulnerable member of the community, which we're working with the Highland Hospice with at the moment, that works out for the year at around £2,000 per garden. And that includes everything with your overheads, your your fuel, your labor, stuff like that, and materials. So it really, I suppose it boils down to the contracts that we take on. If I could, in the first 5 years, take on three or four large factors and build up relationships with local businesses, with sites that need maintained, I suppose in my head, and I'm smiling now because it allows us to really make a big difference in the community. I don't have the numbers at the top of my head. I'm not a numbers guy.
So, okay, well, it's not vitally important. I think what I was trying to establish was just like, did you have a vision in mind of, you know, we'll have done 50
vertical
gardens or whatever, you know, something like that. But that's not important, as you've said, if that's not what you're driving for. Let me flip the question around then.
Cool.
If you are sitting here in 5 years' time telling me how it all went wrong, mm-hmm. what would failure look like?
I suppose failure for Agora would be not delivering the community projects properly. It would look like a sort of lack of understanding of what we're born of. I suppose not getting into the community, not speaking to the right people, and not drumming up enough business on the commercial side that allows us to continue to do the work. It's not going to happen. I suppose that would be...
I don't think it will either. I'm just interested to get inside your head about
what
you would not want to happen. Because I think naturally, and correct me if I'm wrong here, from what you've told me, you're thinking like a gardener. So you're planting seeds.
Yeah.
And you're doing all these things to kind of create the conditions to allow something to grow.
Yeah.
But what you probably haven't kind of like got into your head is maybe you do, and that's what I was trying to get to. What is the final garden like when these things have grown from there?
Yeah.
But you can see the nurturing part very clearly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, so my vision is to, you know, if in the future we are super successful and we have a sort of fleet of people who are employed by us doing site maintenance and ground maintenance, and all the factoring is going well, and we're able to win tenders and so on. I would like to have sort of funded roles, or be able to fund a role for volunteers, or someone who manages volunteers, who's doing the community work and helping out. For me, everybody's involved.
Now we're getting somewhere, because what you're actually describing there is the people that you're going to bring on and develop. You talked earlier about young people. Getting them involved in the responses they've got. Mm-hmm. So it's true to say that you do have these plans.
They might be
in your head a wee bit, but you're kind of doing that thing where you're going, we're going to bring people on and do things around it. It's very early days. And I think we have to say, for anybody watching or listening just now, they'd have to understand this is an early days conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm hoping that what we'll do in the future is we'll sit down and we'll do a follow-up to this, because you're so brand new.
I would love it.
And we'll be talking about your successes and your journey and everything like that. But the reason for saying that is, you know, some of the questions I'm posing to you just now are pretty tough, because it's only a few months in with it. But that idea of working with developing people, with young people, have you at this early stage thought about collaborations you might have with other community interest groups or other organisations or institutions, or is that something that you're in the next stage for planning?
No, we're very much hit the ground running with that aspect of it. Collaboration in a community interest company is key. And there's so many great initiatives out there at the moment in Inverness and the Highlands. I had a meeting yesterday with New Start. They have an allotment down, I think it's Dalney, just off the canal. And it's only open a few days a week because of lack of funding. They have a small team of volunteers. So we're in talks with how we work together and how we get in and to sort of take care of the allotment. Allotment needs constant care, and it also provides, it has the potential to provide a great source of well-being for a lot of vulnerable members of the community. So again, it's the embryonic sort of stage of talks with New Start. However, it's got the potential to sort of be far-reaching. But alongside that, our workshops primarily will be delivered with Crocus Island. that's just we're trying to sort of keep it.
What did Crocus Highland do for those people that might not?
So Crocus Highland, they're great. They're a childhood bereavement charity, and it's they provide workshopping and sort of counselling to from ages I think five and up for children. And we are hoping to do two workshops a month with them, and keep it sort of different. The idea is with a workshop, a lot of different workshops have a rigid structure. We don't really have that, okay? I've got a background in childcare, so I believe in child-led sort of learning. And seeing these kids in the garden and, you know, using their senses and getting them to really sort of document and learn about what they're doing naturally. That goes a long way. So yeah, it's exciting what we're doing with Crocus Highland, and I think it's beneficial and it's required. But also we work with Highland Hospice, and they have been referring sort of beneficiaries of the garden care to us. I think we've got six or seven at the moment, and we are providing ongoing maintenance, and it's, again, we're keeping it sort of small, but as we go forward, I want to sort of build relationships with different charities, and then the referral grounds will sort of grow, but that all comes down to if we're able to bring more money into the company. So the more that we bring in, the more relationships we can build, and the more we can do in the community.
And if people are watching, listening to this just now, and they want to get in touch, first of all, two questions. Mm. First of all, the first question would be, what kinds of people are you looking for? For example, would, you know, community councils or, you know, different charities or, you know, different organisations or just people that want to help? Who are you looking to make contact with?
Loads and loads of people at the moment, Drew. I think...
So this is your outreach.
Yeah, on the side of referral, if there's any charities or organisations who think that they have people or look after people who might benefit from having their garden space maintained and looked after, we'd encourage them to get in touch with us because that's who we're trying to reach, you know. Or if there's anybody who thinks that they have a group that might benefit from a workshop in gardening, then definitely we welcome those kind of organisations and charities. But also, we're looking to hear from local businesses and you know, things like hotels with grounds that need maintained, who would like to see their money going back into the community.
And the second part of that question is, how do people get in touch with you?
So we have Facebook, we've got Instagram.
So what would be the Facebook, what would people search for on Facebook?
Argara.
Argara.
Which is A-R space G-A-R-A-D-H.
Right.
And it's, yeah, it's it took me a little while to get a hang of that. But yeah, it's Argara. You can find us on there. We haven't got a website yet, but I'm in the process of building that up. Yeah, and my, you know, you can contact me. All my contact details are on those sites.
You were obviously interested, and I'm going to ask the most obvious question that I would ask of any guest. Mm-hmm. Normally, it's a bit more challenging for everybody else that comes in because they don't have this direct link with the actual name. But what does Growth for Good mean to you?
Growth for Good is it's about doing something for the benefit of others. Okay, so it's about doing something that you're not in it to make a profit, you're in it to put stuff back, to deliver to the community, to strengthen relationships and to, yeah, I don't know, grow for good, that you've nailed it with the name.
It's quite literally. Yeah. I thought, how am I going to ask this question? Because it's just so obvious in terms of what you've been talking about.
Yeah, no, it's a great
thing. Yeah. Well, thank you very much indeed for joining us today, Curtis McMillan from Argara, on the Growth for Good podcast. It's been a delight to hear about your new venture. I'm sure everybody who watch and listen to this will be looking to see you, how you get on. And I would hope at some point in the future to bring an update to see how that's going with you. So thanks once again for joining us.
Thank you very much, Drew.
Well, that was Curtis McMillan, founder of Argara. What stays with me from that conversation is how little of it was about strategy. 6 months in, Curtis is still working out who the right partners are. He's still knocking on doors. What he has got right is the instinct. He's doing it one client at a time, one referral, one workshop at a time, and he's letting the structure catch up with what's already working. And that's a model that's clearly working for him as he's building something special. If you want to find Argara to support them or just to find out what they're doing, you can search for it on Facebook and Instagram, and the links are in the description of this episode. Of course, you can find more Growth for Good podcasts on the website at drewhendry.scot or on our YouTube channel. And of course, the insight articles on all of the people that we interview, and you can connect with me on LinkedIn. Please do subscribe or like, it does help the numbers get up. So thanks for listening or watching, and I hope to see you next time.